from the MST, one of the most important social movements in the world. This room has heard about exciting ideas from Brazil before. About 8 years ago, Lula da Silva came here, and it was the first that many of us heard about the exciting new ideas coming from Brazil. Well, much has happened in the last decade in Brazil, and Lula is now the president of Brazil. And João Pedro is going to speak to us from the perspective of the social movements in Brazil. And we're very grateful to the CASED, the Canadian Association for Studies in International Development and Development and Peace, who brought João Pedro here to Canada, and to the sponsors for tonight, CIRLAC from York University, the Transformational Learning Center here at OISE, and the Gindit Chair in Social Justice and Democracy from Ryerson, which is, I hold that chair. And we're also quite happy because we think it's the first time that the three universities and counties co-sponsored something together, but we can assure you it won't be the last time. All these three organizations are committed to using the resources of post-secondary institutions to bring radical politics to our city and to promote discussion of radical politics. And we're going to work together to do that. I also want to thank our co-sponsors who helped us to build the meeting, the CAW International Department, the Center for Social Justice, the Council of Canadians, the Primates World Relief and Development Fund, the Justice for Migrant Workers, Science for Peace, the Steelworkers, and the Toronto Social Forum. So, with that, I'm just going to explain a bit how the meeting's going to go. João Pedro doesn't speak English, and he will be speaking in Spanish. And Dave Green will interpret, but she will be in the front row, so you can hear this disembodied voice interpreting for him. But she wants to be able to see him, so that's how it's going to work. He's going to speak for about 20 minutes with translation. That means 40 minutes. We've also asked a few local activists to kick off the discussion period by posing questions, and then we'll open the questions up to you. I was just in Edmonton, and they have a slogan there, which is stand up, speak out, and be brief. And so I'm going to pose that on our discussion. And now we're going to aim to end at 9 o'clock. So hopefully we'll have a nice, lively meeting with lots of dialogue and discussion. And now to introduce João Pedro, I'd like to introduce to you the person who's been responsible primarily for organizing this event from CIRLAC at York University, the acting executive director, Marshall Beck.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
I consider it an honor to be introducing our speaker tonight. I'm also going to say a few words briefly about his movement as well, because more than the man, it's also the movement we're here to hear about tonight. And I'm scripted because my improvisation isn't my strength. In one of the most inequitable societies in the world, where land ownership patterns are more skewed than in almost any other country, where 1% of the landowners own nearly 50% of the agricultural land, and where some 23 million people in the countryside live in dire poverty. There, in the face of potential assassination and violence meted out with near total impunity by land elites, the poorest of the poor have organized themselves in order to push forward, by direct action from below, a much-needed land reform, agrarian reform, that has long been promised, but never delivered. And in so doing, with almost 20 years of experience and some million members, they have come to form the largest and most important grassroots organization in Latin America, what Noam Chomsky recently called the most important and exciting popular movement in the world. Far from being merely concerned with helping individual families obtain their own piece of land, this movement has sought to emancipate and empower the dispossessed through organization and education. And it has sought with great success to rebuild a cooperative culture in communities of families ravaged by poverty. It also promotes an alternative approach to rural development, offering, in the words of Britain's newspaper The Guardian, a radical solution to the country's problems, growing food for the rural poor rather than for giant corporations. The pursuit of such goals, of course, have brought into confrontation with global structures and interests, and it has risen to the challenge by building networks of international solidarity and by engaging in struggles of international importance, such as the anti-globalization movement, those opposing the GMOs and the patenting of seeds, and the movement against the entrenchment of neoliberal policies through the proposed creation of a free trade area of the Americas. I'm speaking, of course, of the Landless Workers Movement, the MST. And although the MST is a broad-based organization that operates by collective action and mass mobilization, one that overtly rejects the importance of individual leaders, it is hard not to perceive our speaker tonight, Jean-Pedro Sejdi, as a person of singular importance and influence within the movement. Sejdi was born the son of small farmers in the southernmost state of Brazil, Rio Grande do Sul, where, despite his humble origins, he obtained a degree in economics from the Catholic Pontifical University of Porto Alegre, before winning a scholarship that allowed him to complete his graduate studies in the same discipline in UNA, the Autonomous National University of Mexico. He has long been active in rural struggles in Brazil, first as a member of the Regional Commission of Grape Producers, and later through his employment in the Agricultural Department of the State Government of Rio Grande do Sul. Since 1979, he has been especially active in struggles for land reform. He was a prominent organizer among those from all over Brazil who gathered in 1984 in a meeting that resulted in the formation of the MST. One of the founders of the movement, he remains a member of its national directorate. He's also an active player in the International Farm Workers Network, Dia Campesina, and has been involved in the organization of the World Social Forum in Porto Alegre. He's the author of numerous books, has been interviewed widely in print media, and publishes countless essays and articles in Brazil and abroad in questions of rural development, globalization, and political struggle. Within the MST, he's certainly the most visible and one of the most articulate and visionary of its spokespersons, and he's consistently identified in the media as one of, if not the, most important leader of the movement. In a published interview, however, he explained this away by pointing out that he is a chatterbox, and that it is always the chatterboxes who are most seen and heard, even if they're not the most important players. But despite his disavowal of personal importance, we're thrilled with his presence tonight, and I ask you all please to give him a warm welcome to a tireless social militant of a truly inspirational movement.
Do you understand that?
Buenas noches. Antes de empezar, quisiera invitar a una compañera que también es dirigente de nuestro movimiento y que es responsable por el sector de educación que tiene todo a ver con esta universidad. Por favor, la compañera Sandra.
I'd like to introduce you, our sister Sandra, who's responsible for education within the MST and is here as part of our tour.
Quisiera agradecer a todos los que se involucraron en preparar esta actividad. Me da mucho gusto estar con ustedes, porque sé que más do que un espacio académico de la universidad, estoy aquí con los luchadores del pueblo de Canadá. Quiero agradecer la oportunidad de las organizaciones y movimientos que han invitado a nuestra organización para estar con ustedes en esos días, no solo acá, sino que en otras partes de Canadá. Es la primera vez que hemos llegado aquí. Sin embargo, nos hace que el mundo se vuelve cada vez más chico, porque por lo que hemos escuchado, los problemas no son muy distintos de lo que ocurre en Brasil.
I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to be here, and thanks to all the organizations and movements that have invited our organization to be here with you tonight, not just in Toronto, but across Canada where I'll be speaking. It's my first time here, but you know the world is getting smaller every day, and it seems like the problems that you are facing are very similar to the ones that we face.
Una lástima que todavía tenemos la barrera del idioma que nos quita tiempo y nos aísla un poco tanto entre nuestros pueblos y países como acá, porque siempre el idioma es una forma de las personas acercarse más, y cuando hablamos en nuestro idioma es posible hablar más con el corazón y menos con el cerebro, y en este sentido el corazón vale más que el cerebro.
Unfortunately, we still have a language barrier, and that takes time away from our interaction, and it's also isolating. It's a problem that we have in Latin America, where some of us speak Portuguese and some of us speak Spanish and other languages, and also, of course, here with you, when we speak English. It would be better if we could all speak the same language, because I think when you speak a language, the same language with someone, you get closer to them, and you speak more from your heart and less from your brain, and I think what your heart has to say is usually more important.
Aprovecho para invitarlos a quizá algún día puedan ustedes visitarnos en nuestros acampamientos, en nuestros asentamientos, en nuestras escuelas, en nuestras marchas, ojalá en alguna toma de tierra, y tengo seguridad que si ustedes estén ahí no necesitarán hablar en inglés, pero nos entenderá igual.
I'd like to invite you to come to visit us someday, whenever you can, to visit our camps and our settlements and our schools, and take part in our marches, and if possible, to come and visit the lands that we have taken over. I'm sure that even if the people that you will meet don't speak English, you won't have any trouble understanding.
Quisiera aprovechar esta noche para compartir con ustedes algunas ideas de nuestro movimiento, de cómo nosotros como movimiento social en Brasil miramos la coyuntura internacional y el rol de los movimientos sociales, más do que quedarnos a hablar de nosotros mismos.
Tonight I'd like to share some ideas from the perspective of our movement, how we see as a social movement the international situation, and to talk about the role of social movements in the current scene, not just to talk about the social movement that we are part of.
El Brasil vive una coyuntura muy especial, pero para entender lo que pasa en Brasil es necesario antes entender el contexto económico y social que conforma la coyuntura internacional. Y ojalá después, en el espacio que tendremos para debatir y escuchar opiniones de ustedes, podremos, quién sabe, hablar en más detalles de la situación brasileña y de la situación del movimiento sin tierra. Pero quisiera en esa introducción inicial hablar más de cómo nosotros estamos mirando el mundo.
Brazil is living through a very special time, and in order to understand that, it's very important to understand the underlying economic and social context that is affecting the whole world. I have to be very brief in this part, but I'm hoping that later on in our discussion, when I get a chance to hear from you, we'll have an opportunity to give a little bit more detail about the situation and about the landless movement. But first, I would like to explain to you how we see the world.
Quisiera compartir estas ideas no para convencerlos, porque creo que ustedes tienen también una visión particular desde su local de trabajo, desde su local de lucha, de cómo están mirando la situación internacional y de la lucha social en el mundo. Quisiera compartir para que ustedes sepan cuáles son las ideas que nosotros en nuestros cursos de capacitación entre nuestra militancia debatimos sobre los problemas que consideramos ser los dilemas de la humanidad y los dilemas que nuestra sociedad brasileña enfrentará en los próximos años.
I'd like to share some of my ideas with you. And it's not to convince you. You have your own vision that you have built up from your own workplaces and your own point of struggle. I know that you have your own ways of how you look at the international struggle. But I want to give you a perspective so that you will know what we talk about with our activists in our educational sessions, what we call the humanitarian dilemma, or human dilemma, and how that those dilemmas are facing Brazil.
Nosotros analizamos la coyuntura internacional bajo algunos aspectos generales. Creemos que desde la década de 80 hasta el 2000 hubo un cambio muy importante en el modo de acumulación del capital a nivel internacional.
We see the, this international conjuncture in kind of a general way. We could say that starting in the 80s up to about the year 2000, there were some major changes in the model of capital accumulation.
Esos cambios influyeron a las luchas en todos los países del mundo y fueron el momento en que se internacionalizó de una forma más clara el capital y aparecieron en nuestros países al sur como las políticas económicas bajo el renglón del neoliberalismo, y el neoliberalismo para nosotros es sinónimo de nueva libertad total para el capital internacional financiero.
The changes, there have been a number of changes that have influenced the struggles in all countries during this period. We've seen very clearly the internationalization of capital, and we began to see the appearance in the southern economic policies, a new form which we call, or became called neoliberalism, which for us is synonymous with the new freedom for capital, the total freedom of capital to do what it wants.
¿Qué cambios hubieron en ese periodo? En primer lugar, la derrocada de los llamados países socialistas, que aunque tuviéramos muchas críticas a sus regímenes, pero en la correlación de fuerzas internacionales, ellos representaban una barrera al aumento de la expansión de la acumulación del capital.
So when we talk about what kind of changes occurred during the period, during this time, the socialist countries crumbled. Now, we of course had many critiques of those regimes, but whatever those critiques were, the socialist countries had a very important role in the international balance of power, and they kept in check other imperial forces.
Hubo una revolución tecnológica en el mundo del trabajo que cambió la matriz productiva adentro de las fábricas, y con eso se multiplicó por N veces el aumento de la productividad del trabajo. Con eso el capital pudo producir mucho más mercancías en menor tiempo y con menos trabajo, y de ahí se produjo una exclusión del trabajo productivo, una relativización del poder de la clase obrera y la destrucción en cuanto a fuerza organizada del movimiento sindical en casi todos los países.
We also went through a technological revolution where productivity was completely changed. Companies were reorganized so that they multiplied their capacity for production. This means that with the same capital, you could now produce more goods with less time and less labor. This led to an exclusion of many workers and a relativization of the power of the working class, and more concretely, the destruction of the power of unions to influence the relationship of labor.
Las consecuencias sociales y ideológicas sobre nuestro campo popular fueron ahí aún más trágicas. ¿Por qué? De un lado, eso produjo un desánimo entre la gente, un descenso del movimiento de masas y una derrota ideológica en que la gente ya no creía más en posibilidad de cambios, no creía más en el socialismo, no creía más en la posibilidad de algún tipo de revolución. Y eso produjo una crisis organizativa en todos los sectores sociales organizadas de la clase trabajadora, sobre todo del tercer mundo.
The social and ideological consequences for social movements were even more tragic. First of all, it just discouraged people. It made mass movements kind of repressed and depressed the mass movements. People ideologically no longer trusted in change. They didn't believe in socialism. They didn't believe in revolution. It produced an organizational crisis in all the social movements, but especially in the third world.
Entonces, vivimos dos décadas muy problemáticas para el desarrollo de la humanidad, que de un lado hubo una ofensiva del capital que acumuló mucho dinero, que obtuvo muchas tasas de ganancias, y por otro lado un aplastamiento de la clase trabajadora, de los pueblos, una desorganización y una crisis ideológica que llegó al punto de los ideólogos del capital pregonaren que el capitalismo sería el fin de la historia.
This means that we've lived through two decades that were very problematic for the development of humanity. Capital went on the offensive with gigantic accumulations of money and profit and a complete crushing of the working class, a process of deorganization, ideological crisis to the point that it looked like capitalism was going to end human history.
Cuando muchos de nosotros cayeron en esa cantilena y se creyeron también, muchos de nosotros se dejaron cooptar, se cayeron en un montón de desviaciones. Se produjeron todo tipo de crisis ideológicas adentro de los movimientos sociales. Pero a la vez, cuando todo parecía que se había acabado, es que el viejo Marx volvía a tener razón. Y el capital volvió a entrar en crisis.
Many of us fell into this trap. Some people were co-opted, some people were just turned into the wrong direction. It was a period of extreme ideological crisis. And just when it looked like everything was over, good old Marx turned out to be right.
Entonces, como todos ustedes están enterados, ya creo que hay un consenso incluso en la academia y entre los intelectuales de izquierda de todas las corrientes, de que a fines del siglo pasado y a principios de los últimos años, el capitalismo internacional ingresó en una nueva etapa de crisis cíclica. Pero con un agravante, que como ahora la economía está globalizada y sobre la hegemonía del capital financiero y de la economía de Estados Unidos, cuando la economía de Estados Unidos entra en crisis, lleva junto toda la economía capitalista internacional.
as you know, and I think there's basically a consensus among academics and left-wing intellectuals, everybody would pretty well say that in the last years of the last century and the first years of this century, we've seen a new phase of capitalism, which is a new cyclical crisis phase for international capitalism, with one worsening factor, which is with all the globalization of finance capital and the reliance on U.S. Capital, when U.S. capital goes into crisis, it takes everybody with it.
Ante ese cuadro de crisis del capitalismo, nos hemos dado cuenta que el núcleo central del poder que está representado en nuestra opinión por las 500 mayores empresas transnacionales que, les recuerdo, controlan hoy el 58% de la producción mundial, sin embargo dan empleo solo para 1.8% de la población económicamente activa del mundo y que a la vez controlo una producción superior a los 133 países más pobres del mundo, esas empresas trataron de ponerse de acuerdo y de alguna forma implementar una nueva estrategia para sacar el capitalismo de la crisis.
Well, we realize that the hub of power, which I would say are the 500 largest corporations, and I would like to remind you that, that these 500 largest corporations control 58% of the world production, but only create jobs for 1.8% of the world's labor force. They control the production almost entirely of the 133 poorest countries. But these companies tried to get together on a new strategy to get capitalism out of its crisis.
Es cierto que ellos tienen varios espacios de aglutinación de proyectos. Está la confluencia alrededor del gobierno Bush, que ya es producto de la voluntad de esas empresas. Es cierto que se aglutinan alrededor del G7, y me da lástima que el gobierno canadiense también participe de eso, porque es ahí donde deciden los rumbos de la economía y de la política internacional. Y tienen otros espacios, como es el Foro de Davos o la renovación del Consenso de Washington. Pero en todos esos espacios, ellos están tratando de elaborar una nueva estrategia de corto plazo, de mediano plazo y largo plazo. Y entre esas varias estrategias para renovar el capitalismo y alcanzar un nuevo patrón de acumulación, la primera de ellas es voltar a priorizar las inversiones en la industria bélica. Y como ustedes saben, la industria bélica, según nos explicaba Marx, es una industria muy especial porque produce una mercancía que es hecha para ser destruida. Y al ser destruida, abre espacio para un nuevo proceso de producción y acumulación. Por eso que es una industria de la muerte. Y para que la industria bélica se desarrolle, es necesario que los políticos declaren guerra.
They have ways to bring their plans together. The Bush government is one expression of the plans of the multinationals, and the Bush government expresses the will of these multinational companies. It's also true that the G7 is a space for these companies to control the agenda, and I'm very sorry that Canada is now part of the G7, because that's the organization that decides the direction for the world's economy and politics. There's Davos and the Washington Consensus, where people come together to come up with new short-term, medium-term, and long-term strategies and attempt to renew the model of capitalism and accumulation. And what they've come up with basically is that the way to increase accumulation is to invest in war production. Marx tells us that war production is a very special industry because it's the only industry where everything that is created is meant to be destroyed. And every time the products are destroyed, it creates the opportunity to create new products that are then destroyed. But it creates a lot of profit. it's a death industry, and in order for it to work right, the politicians have to be willing to declare wars.
La segunda estrategia es mantener el control y el monopolio de las fuentes de energía que sostiene el capitalismo, que en este momento es el petróleo. Y poner la estrategia de la industria bélica y del petróleo es que han estimulado en los últimos años la guerra de Yugoslavia, la invasión a Afganistán, la guerra del Irak y sigue la guerra de Palestina, que no es una guerra religiosa. Lo que se gasta en Palestina son armas hechas en Estados Unidos. Incluso nos hacen una ofensa, y a ustedes también, cuando llaman a ese helicóptero israelí, helicóptero Apache, porque nos atacan a nuestra cultura y a lo que representaron los pueblos indígenas de nuestro continente. Y es por esa razón que están estimulando la guerra civil en Colombia, que no es una guerra del narco. Ahí lo que se trata es de gastar munición y armamento hecho en los Estados Unidos. El problema del narco está en la banca de los Estados Unidos. Y por esa misma razón es que intentaron derrumbar al presidente Chávez, porque no aceptan que el pueblo venezolano controle el petróleo, que hoy abastece el 30% de la economía estadounidense. Entienden el español y se siguen hablando. Se siguen así, la que debería seguir en español.
I'm really glad so many people understand Spanish and getting so excited. It makes them want to speak Spanish more. The second strategy is to control the sources of energy, principally oil. War and oil go together, and these two elements are what caused the war in Yugoslavia, the invasion of Afghanistan, the war in Iraq, and the Palestinian war, which is not a religious war. It's an opportunity to use a lot of U.S.-made weapons. And you know, it's really an offense that the helicopter that's used in the attacks on Palestine is called an Apache. It's a terrible use of the name of one of our Aboriginal groups from the Americas. It's the same situation, it's an assault on our culture. Also, it's the same urge towards war that is causing the support for the civil war in Colombia. It's not a war about drugs. It's about the use of resources, and it's about a way to use up U.S.-made weapons. The attack of the U.S. On the government of Chavez in Venezuela is because he would not allow the U.S. To control the oil that supplies 30% of the U.S. market.
El tercer punto de su estrategia es mantener el control al acceso a la biodiversidad del planeta y al agua. En el tema del agua, que hay muchas reflexiones incluso acá en Canadá, por lo que sabemos, es porque el capitán descubrió que el agua, tal fueron las agresiones que hicimos, se ha vuelto un bien no renovable. Y entonces ellos quieren transformar ahora, en el siglo XXI, el agua una mercancía. Y como es un bien interminable y la población aumenta cada día, ellos saben que van a poder sacar muchas ganancias si logran controlar el agua. La empresa Nestlé en Brasil ya controla el 70% del mercado de agua potable en vasijas. Ya sabíamos que ganaban dinero mezclando agua con leche, pero ganar dinero solo con agua ya es demasiado.
Profits by watering down the milk, but when they start to make profits just on the water, it's really not
helpful. En el tema de la biodiversidad, Su estrategia es porque la biodiversidad tiene las materias primas de la industria del futuro que el capital quiere controlar, que son los nuevos materiales y los nuevos organismos vivos que quieren crear por la técnica de la transgenía, que han desarrollado con mucha propiedad y nos han ayudado, y la agradezco públicamente aquí a un compatriota de ustedes que hemos traducido en Brasil, que se llama Pet Money, y que nos ha alertado del desarrollo de la nanotecnología que va a permitir que esas grandes empresas puedan manipular las materias, manipular la mezcla de genes y con eso producir nuevas mercancías, nuevos organismos vivos, que mezclado con la ley de propiedad privada de seres vivos, la ley de patentes que ya fue aprobada en la OMC, ellos quieren entonces crear un nuevo renglón de mercado acaparado, monopólico, donde puedan en el futuro de 20, 30 años sacar muchas ganancias de esos nuevos productos.
Biodiversity is a very key future industry. The idea is to develop new materials and new blood organisms through genetic modification. And I have to thank a Canadian compatriot of yours, Pat Mooney, who's been very active in the development of nanotechnology, gene mixtures, helping to come up with new live organisms. And that, combined with the new rules about private property and patenting, the new patent legislation that was just approved, or patent rules that were approved by the WTO, the World Trade Organization, are leading to a new monopoly on a whole new market that will flourish over the next 20 to 30 years.
Por último, su estrategia es ahora tener libertad total en las economías del sur y de todo el mundo para que el capital financiero circule de una forma libre y rápida y controle el sector de servicios. A ellos no les interesa más poner fábricas. Ellos quieren aumentar sus ganancias controlando los servicios, donde el capital gira de una manera mucho más rápida, con ganancias mayores. Así quieren controlar los medios de comunicación, quieren controlar nuestra moneda, el sistema bancario, los servicios de comercio. No es por acaso que hoy día, en este año de 2003, ya la empresa más grande del mundo ya no es ninguna General Motors, es la empresa de comercio de Estados Unidos, Walmart. Lo único que hace es vender mercancía a ustedes, que nosotros ni dinero tenemos para comprar de ellos.